Welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast, where we're serving up gospel-fueled courage to the Christian woman to remain faithful in her calling. Hello, and welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast. My name is Jordan Sparks, and I'm here with my husband, Jared.
And a cup of coffee.
And a bottle of water. It is 4:40 a.m. We thought we'd go ahead and do another episode in our marriage series. It's been a while back now that we actually did the first one.
Probably a month.
We did one on fighting a while back, and we said that we were going to do more into writing questions, and you guys have. So thank you. And again, if you have any more marriage questions, just message me on Instagram on the Fruitful and Fearless or my personal Instagram.
We have all the answers.
No, we definitely don't, but we're willing to talk about it. So one that you guys mentioned was finances. So a long time ago, whenever Fruitful and Fearless first started, we did an episode on I can't remember if it was me and Lexi or me and you. I can't remember. Maybe all of us. I can't remember. We did an episode on finances, and Jared and I told a little bit of our story. So if you are a longtime listener, you may have heard some of this before, but it's been so long ago. We thought that it would be fun and helpful, perhaps, if we recounted God's wondrous deeds in our life again, in the ways that he's provided for us in finances.
Okay, so you and I were raised differently. My parents raised me differently than your parents raised you. We end up getting married, and then we have two different ways of doing money. I was pretty much a train wreck financially when we got together. I did have a home, which was good, but I had a bunch of student loans, and you came from a family with one-income family. Your dad took care of you. You guys budgeted, financed well. You were in a good place yourself.
Well, my family had a huge emphasis on saving money. So if you, even as a kid, my dad would teach us, if you made money, then you're going to tithe 10%. 10% of that goes to God. And then with whatever is left of that money, half of it we save, and the other half, you're free to do what you want with, but know that later on there might be something that you want more than something you're wanting right now. So if there's something you want right now, you have 50% of what's left to buy with. But know that you have expenses coming up, like when you turn 16, you'll want to buy a car. And after that, you're going to want to have money when you live on your own. So it was just instilled in us in a very early age to save money, to put back money for something that you will need in the future.
And that was not the case with me. I worked when I was young. I was mowing yards. And you've heard me say 1,000 times that there was one summer I had 14 yards. And when you have 14 yards, you're making $20. Back then, there was probably a few yards I was only making 15 bucks on, but $15 to $25 to $30 a yard. I was making good money.
A week?
A week per yard.
And how old were you?
I was 13, 14 years old.
Rolling in the dough.
I was rolling in the dough. But I was wasting it, especially when I turned 16 and was still mowing. There was one year I got crazy hair and decided to work at Sonic as a cook, and it was a disaster. There was no reason I should have done that. So I made way less money, and it was miserable. I couldn't even listen to MX when I was...
Tyranny.
Yeah, I know. It was awful. When I was mowing, I had a little Dixon zero-turn mower, and I would drive all over town with that
thing. In a Walkman?
And not a Walkman. I had a Discman.
Okay.
And I would listen to my CDs. It was awesome. And then I would get over there, then I would mow, and I blew so much money on Dr. Pepper, Cool Mint drops, clothes, movies, Dairy Queen blizzards, wasted so much money. So my parents were pretty much hands off with me, with my money. And the patterns then that we took going into marriage, we had to really find our strife, because I always say that God answered many prayers when I got married to Jordan, but I also got to learn a lot from her dad and from her uncle. And really, over the first few years of our marriage, kind of just overhauled my thinking about money, finances, investing, and saving, and all of that, and really had to figure all that stuff out.
And, you know, you were really humble about it. You weren't like, I don't want to hear what you have to say. You were like, I know that I have a lot to learn when it comes to finances. And you were really willing to have a relationship with them and learn what they had to say. And I think that you saw their life and were like, okay, I want to learn from these men. So we came into marriage. I'm not from a rich family or anything like that.
Dad was a teacher.
My dad was a preacher. A teacher and a preacher. So but he only preached for 6 years of my growing up life. So, you know, a modest income, but was just excellent at saving. And like
built his house, had his house paid off by the time he was like 28.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So whenever we got married, I had some money saved and we paid off some debt.
Yeah, that was like
the order of
events. Wait, hold on, hold on. You're saving me embarrassment. I had a credit card and we had to pay off my credit card of like $2,500 or something like that. And I felt about an inch tall because the first thing we had to do was take some of the money that Jordan brought into our marriage. The literally like the saving grace here is at least we had a house that I had bought or a trailer that I'd bought. Not a house. When I say house, oh, that's another thing. We got a home makeover. God's always taking care of us by just miraculous means.
I would tell the whole story about that.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
Go ahead. Finish your sentence.
Okay. And then we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 weeks before we got married, I was working as a roofer, which I'm back doing that now. I'm still preaching, obviously, but I'm roofing on the side. Well, 15 years ago, 16, 17 years ago, something, I had been roofing. And inspecting roofs, roofs and selling roofs, working with people, working with insurance companies, giving bids, that kind of thing. So not actually putting the roof on. And our company treated me really great. And they took all our people to a Christmas getaway in Branson. And when we were there, I won a raffle, which was a television. It's still
hanging.
Working. It's still in our house, working still to this day. A Philips Magnavox, 32-inch, what I thought was a big screen, flat screen TV. And then they announced that they were going to be doing a home makeover in each of their markets. And at that time, their strategy was they went into a high-risk storm area after a storm and then hired some local people and set up shop in that local area. So we had Texas group, we had Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois. Well, they announced that the first thing they're going to be doing is a home makeover for a young preacher in Illinois. But they didn't announce it was me. And so I got to thinking like, well, I mean, that kind of sounds like me. And then by the end of the night, they announced that they were going to be doing the home makeover. And they kind of did the exhibit Pimp My Ride, but with our trailer. And so 2 weeks before we got married, it was me. And I think my buddies had moved out at that point. So it was just me living there. And they went in and redid the whole thing. So when we got married, we got to live in a 1973 updated trailer.
Yeah,
so at least I had that.
It was very cute. They did a great job. And my family helped too, and we had friends that helped, and they like painted it and put a new roof on and new flooring in and cabinets and countertops and finished out a bedroom in the back. And
yeah, I think it was anything else. The master bedroom on the back.
My sewing shop, the roof of my sewing shop, and just did a lot of stuff. So that was a huge blessing to us financially, and just a huge way that God provided for us miraculously to make our home worth a lot more money than what it had been purchased
for. Well, and we had bought it. I bought it in 2008 and sold it in 2015. And just, you know, the bottom fell out of everything in 2008 when it comes to real estate too. And just it almost doubled in value when it comes to its, not appraisal. Yeah, appraisal. Yeah, the appraisal almost doubled in value. And we didn't sell it for the double in value, but we had already paid it off. And I'm kind of like a Dave Ramsey.
Quickly, after we got married, I can't remember, but within a year or two of being married, we paid it off.
And I'm kind of like a Dave Ramsey boomer kind of guy when it comes to finances and paying things with cash and saving up, paying your house off. I understand the dual streams or multiple streams of income that most people need now. In fact, I have that. But the way we've come to an agreement with finances, and really as the man is leading the household, a lot of your financial goals are going to be built around the skill set and the mindset of that family directed by that husband. Some of you are really good at flipping houses and, you know, buying houses and renting and Airbnb and that kind of thing. And while I have those abilities, it makes me a nervous wreck thinking about doing that. And there's others that are just going to be thinking, how can I make some extra money and income on the side, which is what has worked out really well, especially with this roofing gig on the side. And that has been really helpful in helping us get to and aim at and run towards some financial goals. But pretty much for us, we've always been unified, and we've really had maybe one or two fights on money in 15 years.
Right. Yeah. But we're just, I think that is probably one of the most important pieces of advice we could give about finances is be united.
Yeah.
Have a plan and be united. Don't just haphazardly deal with money, but know like what are our financial goals.
Mm-hmm.
For us, when we first got married, it was as quickly as possible to get out of debt.
I had student loans to pay off.
Yeah, and then the trailer, and that was it, right?
Yeah, And because we paid the credit card off.
Yeah.
And then that means we had to start saving for vehicles. And here's how we've always done it with vehicles. And this is, again, so going back to the unity piece, there is a leader and a follower. But men, make sure that you're learning how to do and investing. You're making sure you know how, but just the basics of financing. Take a Dave Ramsey course or something that's going to help you, or talk to somebody in the church that's going to help you with that. And also, if you're not as good with numbers, it really is okay for your wife to come alongside. She is your helper, after all, and really help you to be at a place that you can actually lead. And if you aren't in that place where you can actually lead financially, then get to that place by having your helper help you, but also getting the wisdom that you need from the millions of resources that are out there to help you understand and get a grasp on those things with finances and investing.
And I think sometimes there's like this weird thing with patriarchy culture where a wife can sometimes feel like because the husband is the leader in all areas of life, she's not allowed to like say anything. And that's weird. Like if you know more about a certain subject, then please be a helper and share wisdom with your husband. Don't just feel like you're not allowed to say anything because that's submission. That's
well,
not submission.
As the man is a leader doesn't mean he knows everything about everything. There's particular skill sets that God has given to a wife. And often that is just thinking through how money works. And if you're, as the man, you go out and it's kind of represented in elder leadership at a church where you'll have a guy that's really good at setting the pace and being out front, but organizational skills are terrible. And so God raises up or gives an elder that's really good at those. We're not all strong in the same ways. And it is okay to be helped by your helper when you're home. That's a really good thing.
So the Proverbs gives lots of wisdom about debt. And we have always felt that we wanted to be out of all forms of debt as quickly as we possibly could. So we just have knocked away at debt and saved money. And God has provided for our needs over and above our needs.
Oh,
has been incredibly generous with us our entire life. And even from childhood, I can think back on things that God provided for me just were once, and it would show up at a yard sale. And I have the sweetest story about Providence. So our daughter had seen the Melissa and Doug ice cream cart thing. I don't even know where she saw it.
Maybe Amazon.
I don't know. So she was like dying for this Melissa and Doug cart thing. Well, they're very expensive. And we were like, no, we're not going to buy that. But I think I just off the cuff was like, maybe pray about it. Maybe God will give you one at a yard sale one day or something. And we were at it. And so anyway, she's been praying about this. And then we were at a yard sale about a month ago, probably. And it had been raining that morning. And we went to a yard sale and a lady was bringing things back out from under a carport. And she literally rolled a Melissa and Doug toy cart right in front of Providence. And Providence was like, oh, mommy, God did it.
Incredible.
And it was
$4, I think.
$4 for a Melissa and Doug. This one is I think it's a taco and ice cream.
Donut. It's a
donut and ice cream food cart. And she was very happy with that. So it was just a very sweet and obvious way that God answered her prayer about something that was not a need. She does not need a Melissa and Doug toy cart, but she wanted it, and God was just extremely generous and sweet to her and answered her prayer. And I have 1 million stories like that in my life too. One I remember very clearly too is when we were first married, I was wanting some pots for our yard, like for landscaping pots to plant flowers in. And just that morning I had mentioned it and went to an estate sale, and there was a multitude of beautiful pots for super cheap. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a million stories of God's provision in our life and just being so sweet and so good to us. So do not ever feel like you can't pray for something that you would like to have.
Yeah.
Because God has given us things we did not need, but were just out of his kindness and generosity to our family.
We could tell story after story after story of God giving us things at estate sales, yard sale. I mean, just time and time again, where God has provided for
us. Are people approaching us? I mean, does anyone want this car?
For free. We got a family vehicle for free, which allowed us to sell the vehicle that Jordan was driving, and I ended up getting a truck. And there's things that
very needed.
Fall in place that God just has always taken care of us, not through massive salaries, not through massive incomes, but through just blessing after blessing that's just kind of jaw-dropping. God, thank you because we didn't deserve any of this stuff. No. We didn't deserve what you've done for us, and yet you've been gracious. And we even said that to our kids. There was a little phrase we had said that we didn't deserve this place.
We God didn't work hard enough for this. No, is God what
just,
we said.
God has just blessed us. So let's back up. I started to say something about vehicles and how we do vehicles, but it's been something that's worked out. When I was a kid, I always heard that you got to buy a vehicle and drive it till the wheels fall off. And when we got married, one of the things that I learned is, you know, hold on a second. You want to buy a vehicle cash, save up, buy the vehicle in cash, and then sell your vehicle when you can still get $5,000 to $8,000 for it or something like that. Then all you have to save is $5,000 to $7,000, and then you can get a new vehicle for $12,000, $13,000, $14,000, and go out and buy something, get a good deal. So make sure and sell your vehicle where you can get enough out of it, and watch your savings and build up. And then every few years, you've got the money to buy a new vehicle. And the way we've always done it is, I want to keep my wife in a good vehicle. And then for me, I just want to get the best deal that I can get. And I drive a 20-year-old truck now, and it was a guy that took care of it really well. So it works really well for me. And then we keep Jordan in something that's nicer, that's going to be something that she can drive for a few years. And we're always saving for the next vehicle. We don't know when it's going to be. It's going to be several years down the road, but we're going to sell our vehicle and then have that $5,000 to $7,000 to $10,000 that we need to be able to buy a new one. And the way now that we've done it financially is basically, if I was to die, I just told Jordan, pay the house off with life insurance and then give all our money to Tyler, which is our money guy, he's a deacon in our church, and have him just invest it and live off the interest kind of thing. But at this point, I pretty much take care with my income of just everything, when it bills, house, I take care of all of that.
Can I say one more thing about the car
situation? Oh, yes. Go ahead.
So one more thing about cars. Whenever I was growing up, like I said, my dad had always taught us about savings. And one thing that he did whenever my brother and I were getting close to 16 years old, he would say, okay, I'll pay half if you pay half for the vehicle. So we had this buy-in, but also we had this help from our father. And we would purchase a car. And I remember my sweet Honda Del Sol, so awesome. It was white. It had that top that came off, put it in the trunk. It was the coolest car ever. Little two-seater. But it wasn't like fancy, expensive car. I think I paid $4,000. I think we paid $4,000 for that car.
Back in, 2002, you could get a nice vehicle for $4,000.
Yeah. I paid $2,000. He paid $2,000. And I had a sweet paid-off vehicle that we were able to then do the process that Jared had mentioned, where we sell it where there's still value and then upgrade a little bit each time so that you're having a nice vehicle with less miles and is in good shape.
So for us, back to the finances thing, we have an account together. I take care of everything. And then you've always had a business account on the side and then a box for like mad money kind of thing. And for us, that's worked out really well. I think it's important for, in that unity we've been talking about for husband and wife, that you don't have secret pockets of cash or money that you keep from each other, but you know what each other has and you recognize that we have one income. We have, this is our family. This is our money. This is our responsibility. And that the man recognizes that he doesn't have to have any account on the side that he's saving for this or that his wife doesn't know about. And the wife knows that she doesn't have to have this or that on the side that her husband doesn't know. There has to be transparency when it comes to money, or that root of bitterness can really rise up. How many people get into a marriage and the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil? If there isn't that transparency there, there can be some major problems just because the love of money can creep in and then cause major problems in the foundation of a marriage. So you want to make sure that there's transparency there and there's not two different agendas in your household. There's not goals that the husband has, goals that the wife has.
There shouldn't be secrets at all in your marriage, and especially not with finances. So the wife shouldn't be going out and secretly buying things that she feels like she can't tell her husband about, or the husband shouldn't be secretly buying things behind the wife's back that he feels like, I can't let her know that I've bought this thing. You should be so united in finances that your purchases are, of course, I would let you know anything that I bought today. And also, we don't piddle away money other than at yard sales. But we try not to just make unnecessary purchases, which is important. Like, don't just be spending money for the sake of spending money. Think about what you're actually purchasing. Is it something that we need or not?
I think for us both as well, we're both pretty, God has made us both pretty cheap, pretty frugal, where we like nice things, but we don't like paying top dollar for anything. The way God has provided then is bought a Woolrich wool shirt at a thrift store for a quarter, and it's a $400 shirt, and I love it. I love, if anybody knows me, they know I love wool.
He lives in wool.
I love wool, and I've got literally thousands of dollars worth of wool clothes that I've spent, I mean, maybe a total of $200 or $300 on over the years. I don't know, from buying some Pendleton shirts on eBay for $17 with holes in them.
That just, a couple moth holes.
Yeah, there's just a couple moth holes, and that's cheap. But those are the kinds of things where if you're frugal, and I'm also kind of a junker where I buy and sell, I wanted to get a side-by-side, and the way I went out and got a side-by-side is not going down to the Oasis Sports Center and buying a side-by-side with a big loan or anything like that. It was buying and selling, and over a course of about 3 years, I wanted to get a four-wheel drive Polaris Ranger, and was able to do that through just slowly getting there, buying and selling and trading. And poor Jordan, she had to deal with me on her Facebook marketplace and all the messages of people thinking like, boy, Jordan's always selling stuff, you know, like thinking about all the friends that she grew up with, yeah, her poor marketplace.
Jared doesn't have Facebook, so he just uses my marketplace, and people are like, man, Jordan sells a lot of hunting stuff.
Why, she's selling a boat and side-by-sides and you name it. Those kinds of things have worked for us. And we know that, you know, you say, well, you're saying be unified, but how do you be unified? Well, you sit down and you have these conversations and you work it out. And then if you can't get into full agreement about stuff, well, if the husband's being wise and if you can't make it to full agreement about stuff, well, then wife, you follow the leadership of your husband. And husband, be wise with what you're doing with your finances. Don't be an idiot. And then watch God work. God takes care of us. And if we walk in the principles of the Proverbs, if we regulate our generosity the way God has told us to regulate the generosity, then we're going to prioritize proper giving to the Lord and giving generously to the Lord. Then we're going to prioritize our household being in order, and our children are the first poor among us that need to be provided for. And parents have an obligation, according to Paul when he writes the church in Corinth, parents have an obligation to save for their children. And so when we think about our savings account or investment accounts, we're thinking about our children and children's children. And, you know, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Men need to be thinking about, ladies being unified with their husbands need to be thinking about, what's going to be left for our grandchildren? When you think about that next purchase, is it going to be a benefit to your children and your children's children? And I think that's a good guide, generally speaking, to not buying just junk, but right, getting things that are going to last, that are going to be there for your children's children.
Yeah, that is good. And even when it comes to food, because that's a huge expense right now in most people's lives, like, is this a benefit to our children's children? Like, food's an investment, because it's so expensive.
You want to be healthy.
And you want to be healthy, and what you're putting in matters for your generations as well. So that's a big expense, but it matters.
Well,
I'm just thinking about something else when I left.
When it comes to money, it's not rocket science. A lot of younger listeners are not big fans of Dave Ramsey, but the dude has a ton of wisdom. And go back to Larry Burkett if you want to. And the principles of saving and paying things in cash, I realize in today's world, the boomer investment model isn't the most popular. We do need multiple streams of revenue generally. But if you can just get handles on how it works, it's going to be a whole lot easier for you and your family. It's not that difficult. Don't be stupid.
Yeah, and also if you struggle with your husband thinking that you spend too much in a certain area, or if you're like not unified on some things, the envelope system is smart. Like, use cash. Know that you have this much cash to be able to spend for groceries this month. And I know a lot of people order online, so that makes it
$500.
Yeah. Okay. No, but if you know a dollar amount that you're able to spend, that's a lot easier. And when it's gone, it's gone. So yeah, he's got a lot of wisdom. Anything else on finances?
A while back, I had an interview with Dr. Jim Orrick on the Shepherd's Crook podcast. I encourage you to listen to it. He was talking in that episode about John Plowman's talks, and it was Spurgeon, you know, who wrote those. And Spurgeon wrote about a young man who got a line of credit at a general store. And this older man was the father of the young man. And hears that the young man got a line of credit at the general store and looked at him, grabbed him, and in anger, loving anger, I would add, said, "Debt is next to stealing." And he marched that young man back to that general store and made him give back and close that line of credit. And if you can get in your mind that the borrower is the slave to the lender, this is God's word that tells us this. It's going to help you in all of your life thinking about the dangers of debt. You know, there's difference between good debt and bad debt. I understand all of that. There's differences between liabilities and assets. And yet this principle is still there. The borrower is the slave of the lender. And if you want to be a slave in your life, the easiest way to voluntarily become a slave is to continually march yourself and your family into debt. Do whatever you can to get out of debt and be the kind of man that's giving out loans, if you have to your children and your grandchildren, and they're non-interest loans. How great would it be if you could give out loans to your children and your family, and you, instead of going to the bank, you say, hey, little Billy, here's the next $15,000 you need. Just pay it back to me over the next 10 years or next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's no interest, man. Just no worries. Or
it's a way
you're
of
able
protecting
to,
your children.
Or you're able to gift it to them,
yeah,
and say, here's $15,000. Here's $20,000. Here's $6,000. Whatever you need. The borrower is the slave to the lender. There is freedom in owing no man anything but love. And that's what we want to do as Christians.
Yeah. And there's so much to be said just about being patient. You don't have to have it right now. If you have a goal to have a boat, if that's your family goal, then save up for it and sell things or work extra or do what you got to do and save up and then buy it by your own two hands.
Living like no one else now so you can live like no one else later.
Who came up with that?
I wish I did. This is good. I think this has been good stuff. It's kind of been a shotgun episode where we've just been all over the place, but hopefully these tidbits have been helpful and encouraging to you.
All right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.